Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today we have an interview with Juan Williams of Fox News Channel and National Public Radio. But first, our frequent co-host and guest, Columbine dad Brian Rohrbaugh, was interviewed by ABC's Good Morning America and NBC's Today Show regarding the nearly 1,000 pages of Columbine documents the parents have wrested from the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department and now made public. And everywhere it's pretty much the same. People are shocked at how utterly preventable the Columbine murders were, by how much the Jefferson County School District and the Columbine High School lied about what they knew about Harrison Klebold, and also the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department, how they lied to cover up their involvement with Harrison Klebold. So that's big news today. The cover of the Rocky Mountain News, it's mostly a photograph of Brian Rohrbaugh, and throughout his comments about the parents and the murderers. And also today, the FBI announced a terrorist plot to blow up New York City's Holland Tunnel by Asim Hamoud. Once again, it's amazing how many terrorist names have Ham in them. H-A-M, it really is. This guy at the Holland Tunnel, Asim Hamoud. And then there's, of course, Hambali, and there's Hamas, and 9-11's Mohammed Atta, and Al-Qaeda Lieutenant Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and what, a dozen others? Mohammed Abu Abbas, and now Holland Tunnel plotter Asim Hamoud. But our show today is an interview with Juan Williams of Fox News Channel and National Public Radio, and it's about America's involvement in Iraq, where we're at now, in fact, the whole Iraq controversy. Juan Williams, welcome back to Bob Enyart Live.
Hey, my pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you here, Juan, and my wife Cheryl and I, we watch you regularly on Fox News, and I get to hear you on NPR. And so, and we are, as you may recall, conservative right-wingers.
Yeah.
And in America, there's a disagreement over the Iraq war. And I thought it would be worthwhile, since obviously this is of crucial historical importance, for you and I to talk through the Iraq war a bit. And, of course, the upcoming presidential elections will revolve around this issue. And, Juan, I'd like to know if any of the developments have convinced you that it was right that we go into Iraq to take down Saddam Hussein's government.
Well, I think it was absolutely right to take down Saddam Hussein. I mean, Saddam Hussein, it struck me at the time, again, given the intelligence we had, posed a threat if, in fact, he had or was developing weapons of mass destruction. So I don't have any doubts about that, but I would even make it stronger. I would say this, that we did know of the cruelties, the kind of horrors that he was imposing on his own people. He was a man who was oppressing people, especially people who did not belong to the Ba'athist Party, you know, was not a fellow Sunni. So the Shiites, the majority of the country, were being oppressed, and the Kurds, more than oppressed, were being killed.
For this show, we tried to get an update based on everything that's been uncovered since we've been in Iraq, and the mass graves that we have found are pushing the number upward of the number of Iraqis and Kurds murdered by Saddam Hussein seem to total over 300,000. Now, that's mass murder at a genocidal scale. Also, of course, 1,000 Kuwaitis, and that might not sound like a big deal unless you're one of those families.
No, it sounds like a big deal to me.
Yeah.
I'm a
good point.
You know, I'm someone who has been a big supporter of the idea that America should advertise its democratic principles, should stand up against dictators. The counter argument, I must say, and I hear it from lots of the liberal friends that I have, is that, well, you know, what about Rwanda? What about the horrors taking place in Somalia? Gosh, if you go back to even Haiti in our own hemisphere, you can think of horrors that are being perpetrated by dictators and abusive sorts. Why did we pick on Saddam Hussein? And then you get into all the conspiracy theories about George Bush's father, the first President Bush, having been threatened by Saddam, cleaning up what has happened before back in the first Gulf War.
Right. And the truth is, the answer is, if any government in the world is slaughtering its own people, then other governments, if they're to be good neighbors, they should attempt to go in and rescue the innocent from those tyrannical governments.
Well, you know, now this is an interesting argument for you as a conservative to make, because so many of your fellow conservatives were so harsh with Bill Clinton when he did that same thing in Bosnia.
When there is a tyrannical government that's slaughtering its own people, it is right to go in to stop that government. If Jacques Chirac started slaughtering his people and filling mass graves in Paris, we should go into France.
That's the way I feel. So, you know,
exactly.
We're on the same page, and that's why,
okay.
You know, that's why I feel when it comes to Saddam Hussein, the fact that he was not just an oppressor and a dictator, but slaughtering people,
right.
I think it was right to stop him. But, of course, at the time, that was not the justification for us going to war. The justification at the time was weapons of mass destruction.
Okay, and the way I see that is, I'm not a fan of George W. Bush. I'm one of the few right-wing Christians in the media. I've been on for 15 years on a 50,000-watt AM station here in Denver, Colorado. And I'm not a fan. I don't urge people to vote for George W. Bush. But my love for the Iraqi people is greater than my disdain or dislike for George W. Bush. And so,
yeah.
So
well, my love of freedom and my the fact that I get sick when I think of these oppressive dictators, I wish they
right.
all, you know.
Yeah.
I'm in love with the idea of advancing freedom's cause.
Yeah, freedom and justice,
yes,
those
sir.
Are ultimate principles.
Right.
And so if the UN is so incompetent as to not know that a mass murdering dictator should be stopped, if to them the only way they would vote for that, if they're concerned about their own hides because of weapons of mass destruction, I viewed the whole UN mess as a sideshow that we had to get through to try to get UN support to take out Saddam. And so the fact that, well, we thought he had a lot of weapons of mass destruction, now we find out, well, if you recall, Juan Williams, about 3 years ago, our government said two and a half years ago, they said we're going to stop announcing every time we find an old chemical or biological warhead in Iraq. We're going to wait until we found a lot.
Right.
And so just in the last few weeks, they came out and said, look, we have found 500 different chemical warheads and so on. And so that's a lot after a few years, but it's nothing like we thought they had.
Correct.
We had tricked ourselves, but the reason was people were coming out of Iraq desperate to escape Saddam's tyranny, and they were lying and exaggerating how much he had. And oftentimes these were very credible defectors, and we wanted to believe them because we wanted to stop them.
Well, you know, this is where it gets tricky, and slippery ground. But, I mean, the justification went from weapons of mass destruction to the idea that he was an oppressor, to the idea that we're trying to spread democracy. But I must tell you that there were people like Ahmad Shalabi who was aggressively selling the Bush administration, American State Department and others, on the idea that, you know, Saddam Hussein, I might also add the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the press that bought into this,
yeah,
selling them on the idea that he had the weapons of mass destruction.
Right, right. And we know that he used some, and he was lying, we know that,
right,
to the UN weapons inspectors.
Correct.
And everybody, including Russia and Germany, China, everybody believed he had them. And so that we needed to go in to stop a mass murderer. So the weapons of mass destruction was a sideshow needed to convince people who don't know right from wrong that it was the right thing to do.
Oh, really? You think you really believe that right from the start the Bush administration knew that he didn't have weapons of mass destruction?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that was the Bush administration had their policy was regime change in Iraq. And they were saying that before the whole UN, WMD thing became the focus. They were saying regime change is our policy. Saddam Hussein, we never concluded the Gulf War. He violated the terms of the ceasefire, and he was still an aggressor, still a murderer, and we were morally justified for going in. It's just that we got caught in this sideshow of trying to convince the UN that it was the right thing to do, and we've wasted 3 years instead of being unified to get this over with. We've spent 3 years fighting against liberals who focused on there were no WMD, we should have never gone in there.
Well, you know, here's the question. Why do you think we didn't finish the job if what you're saying is, you know, consistent? When the first President Bush, Colin Powell, went in, why didn't they finish the job? Our policy was regime change at that time.
I think it's similar to our overestimation of our success this time. We believe that because Iraq was living under a brutal dictator, that given the slightest opportunity, the Iraqis would exert their freedom. And so we believed that back in 1990. Now, it was naive and wrong. And when you have George W. Bush and you have General Norman Schwarzkopf saying, in retrospect, we did the right thing, they're being immature. They're being cowardice. They should say, we were wrong. He was a mass murdering tyrant. We should have taken him out then. But they didn't.
I think that they were looking at the geopolitical
situation,
especially there in that very vulnerable Middle Eastern region, and saying, we don't want to unsettle people. We don't want to potentially antagonize the Arab states.
Right. But when you have a genocidal maniac running the government.
What do you think about my previous point that there's some genocidal maniacs elsewhere in the world? Look at our relations right now with that nut. Well, I won't say that, but I mean with what I consider an unstable person in North Korea.
Well, right. Now, look at let's discuss Rwanda first.
All right.
Because UN Secretary General Kofi Annan was the point man at the UN for what was happening on the ground in Rwanda. And if you recall, the New York Times published a fax he received from his general in the field saying this genocide is about to begin. We have to move now. We know where a lot of the weapons are. We got to move. We got to try to stop it. And the New York Times published Kofi Annan's response forbidding any action. And now 800,000 Hutus were slaughtered at a rate faster than the Jews were killed by the Germans. And what happened... You know what? You remember what happened to Kofi Annan? He was promoted to the Secretary General of the UN. Why not in humiliation get fired and kicked out because of incompetence that led to almost a million blacks slaughtered? Why not?
Well, I couldn't agree more in terms of the horrors that took place. I know that there were lots of, you know, from Kofi Annan's position, lots of attempts to get African leadership to deal with the problems in Africa, because it was a tribal situation, to try to say that this is an opportunity for African leadership to come together to end violence on the continent. It's not just blacks. I mean, in this case, you have, you know, people of a specific tribe, Tutus and Hutsis, murdering each other.
Right. And the murder was mostly one way. But my point is, the world doesn't seem to have the righteous indignation it should have when the innocent are being slaughtered by the thousands.
I agree. Look, my point to you is exactly that, but it's all over the world. We have it in many places. We've seen it in Kosovo. We've seen it in Rwanda. We're seeing it in Somalia. As I said, we can come to Haiti, where I think it's an ongoing tragedy.
Yeah.
But the question is, why did we pick Iraq at that time? And that's where all the conspiracy theorists go nuts.
Yeah, well, that's true. But we had a history there.
Yeah.
The United Nations, when you become a member of the UN, you agree to honor your neighbor's borders.
Right.
Iraq was a member of the UN. They violated that. They went into Kuwait. And so the Arab world was scared to death of Saddam.
Yeah.
We realized we had been backing him against extremist Islam forces in Iran, and then we look at him and we say, what a nightmare. We've been backing a mass murderer, and so we realized he's a dangerous tyrant, and so we agreed with the Arab world, we will help you guys liberate Kuwait. So we're in there, we're invested, and we interact a lot with Iraq. We don't interact a lot with Rwanda. It's easier for Rwanda to be on the back burner. And when you do a lot of business with a country, you're a lot more involved. And if that country becomes unstable, then it affects us.
Correct. But as you acknowledged earlier in the conversation, after the first incursion, after we stopped Saddam Hussein in Kuwait, sent the Republican Guard back on their heels,
yeah,
we didn't finish the job. Now,
right,
you said that you thought General Schwarzkopf, General Powell, the first President Bush were immature for that.
They thought an insurgency would topple Saddam. That's what they thought.
It never happened.
All right.
So my point to you is, again, the same principle would hold. You and I share this principle that when you see people being slaughtered, when you see gross, awful oppression of,
right,
of people, their hopes and aspirations being denied, that you should step in, that's
Amen.
Part of our role as the superpower in the world.
Amen. And it's the role of any nation that has the ability, if you're able to. Now, if there's oppression halfway around the world, I don't believe it's an absolute moral requirement. But I believe it justifies that any nation from around the world is justified in coming to the aid of other nations where their governments are slaughtering their people.
Well, wait a second. Did you say halfway around the world? Iraq is halfway around the world.
Yeah, I agree. And Juan, I'm pretty much agreeing with you. I'm saying we should, and because we have the ability, that ups our obligation to protect people who are being slaughtered.
Yeah, God bless you. I think that's right. It's just a matter of, you know, you said we had interaction with Iraq. We didn't finish the job the first time we go back. But, you know, it just seems to me that it's at this point, as we look at Iraq, as we look at the progress that we've made, as we look at the people we've captured, the terrorists we've been able to bring down, the question remains, should we be there at this point after having ousted Saddam Hussein?
So then let's talk about this little chapter the last few weeks with Iraq saying they want to give amnesty to some of the insurgents. And we saw this wild flip-flop, this role reversal between Republicans and Democrats in America,
right,
where the doves, the Democrats who love Amnesty International, all of a sudden they're up in arms. No one gets amnesty. How dare they speak of amnesty? And the Republicans are saying, hey, let's hear them out. Let's see who they want to give amnesty to. Now, I'd like you, Juan Williams, to tell us, why do you think the Democrats were so hostile against the notion of amnesty in Iraq?
The Democrats, you mean the Republicans were so hostile?
No, the Democrats.
And the Republicans. But let me just say this. The Democrats were hostile, I think, in part as a political strategy.
Exactly.
And I think the political strategy was to say, wait a second, the Republicans have been the ones who have been saying all along that there's, you know, we're going to hold a hard line against anyone that's killed Americans. But now, in their rush to try to make sense and conceive an exit strategy, they're willing to deal with amnesty for people who have killed Americans.
But these are the people who love amnesty. They look at mass murderers in our courts, and they cheer when they get off on a technicality.
Well,
these
I
are
think,
the ACLU.
I think that's a caricature of the argument. I mean, you mentioned Amnesty International. You know, Amnesty International is about stopping torture of people who have been victims of political oppression. So I don't.
But they're also about amnesty around the world, and the left generally supports amnesty. And I mean, you have mass murderer rapists in America, and the left is against the notion of severe punishment for mass murderer rapists. They want to coddle them, take care of them, rehabilitate them. They don't want to punish them. Now we're on the battlefield in Iraq, and the government there says, well, we want to give amnesty. And all of a sudden, the Democrats, almost with a united voice, come out against it. And
well, as I said, I think personally that you have got to give sovereignty to the Iraqi government. So if Maliki, if the Iraqis have to make some kind of reconciliation among the various tribes there, if they have to say, here's what we're going to do now to move forward to create a reconciliation, a unity government, it's a hard price for me to accept. I got to tell you, as an American, because
right,
the idea is, you know, we have seen 2,500 Americans die.
Right, and I agree with you. There is this transition, which is awkward, but
awkward.
Increasing.
I think, well, you know, as I say, you and I may differ on this one. I just
it's
hard for me to accept, but I'm willing to accept it if it means that they can get a functional government in place.
Juan, I'm agreeing completely with you on that.
Okay,
it's a transition. We're going to sovereignty by the Iraqis, and if they're going to give amnesty to some who are fighting, that's their decision. But here's what I want to point out. The Democrats did a flip-flop on this issue as compared to their normal position of leniency for bad guys.
Oh, no, I think you're making caricatures of Democrats or something. Or I guess it's what
you don't
really
think
mean
they're
is liberal.
Normally, you don't think the Democratic leadership in America has a position normally of leniency toward bad guys?
No. I don't know why you would say that.
Well, how about this? How about that the status quo in America, in our universities, in the media, is that you shouldn't punish criminals, that punishment is barbaric, we should only try to rehabilitate them. They've said, and I got the quotes here in my database, if you think a murderer should be punished, you're mentally ill.
I don't know who said
that. Well, I'll tell you who said that.
That's pretty far outside
that's
the
Michigan
mainstream
state,
of American thought, I think.
That's the state director of mental health for Michigan.
I don't know the person. I don't even know who it is.
Well, in my experience, Democrats are against harsh punishment for bad guys.
No, I think
you're
the
disagreeing.
History in the United States is there have been questions about fair application of the death penalty. There have been questions about it, whether or not it's applied to people of color, to poor people. I mean, you have people like O.J. Simpson. If you get a fancy lawyer, you can get off, you know, that kind of thing.
All right. Well, I want to attribute a horrendous motive to the Democrats who've spoken out against amnesty in Iraq. I think they like the fact that we are in a nightmare because a Republican is in the White House, and they don't want to see this end more swiftly or with less loss of life until Bush has dug his grave. So when the Iraqi government says, we're going to give amnesty, we're going to try to wrap this up, the Democrats are coming out like hawks saying, no, we got to get those people and punish them. That's my take on it.
Well, I think that you're right in terms of the politics of it, but I think here's the thing. I think the facts of it is that the Republicans, I think all Americans, I don't know that that's partisan, I think all Americans are a little bit reluctant to swallow the idea of amnesty for people who have killed American soldiers who went in there as liberators and have not tried to be anybody's occupiers. We have tried to be a force for good in that country.
Yeah.
And the idea that people who killed Americans, especially if they were people, this is my voice here, but especially if they were part of that 10% that are insurgents coming from Iran and around the world to join some terrorist jihad against the United States, why those people should be let to walk, I have no idea. Mm. But if you're saying it's part of an effort to build a government in Iraq that will end the conflict, end the civil war, end all the insurgency, and allow us to leave, well, you know, that's when I'm saying, okay, I think exit is it's time to exit. Let's look at that. So I can appreciate that. But I must say that there are many people, especially hard right people you know well, who for the longest time have been saying that amnesty, when it comes to war crimes, should not be allowed. So
yeah,
it's a little bit of a role reversal, if you will, for all these political sides. But I think you and I agree. If it makes Iraq better able to function, why not?
Juan Williams, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We come from different sides of the political spectrum, but we found a lot of common ground here.
I agree. I enjoyed it, and I hope you'll call again.
We will. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
That's Juan Williams with National Public Radio and Fox News Channel. And the bottom line there was the shedding of innocent blood when a government uses its authority to slaughter its own people, then that gives the moral justification for any nation in the world to go in and attempt to overthrow that government, and then to see a new government established. And that's what we did. And the weapons of mass destruction, now they've been found, albeit not nearly in the quantities that we expected, or the potency, or the delivery mechanisms, but sufficient have been found to hopefully put to rest that sideshow argument about WMD, when the issue was hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Kurds slaughtered by the tyrant murderer Saddam Hussein, not to mention his sons. You know, when his son Uday was killed. Remember that? My wife, Cheryl, said we should go out and have dinner and celebrate. Uday is dead. Uday Hussein. Remember he would take his victims and put them alive into wood chipping machines? Remember that? He'd throw them into vats of acid, literally. He had a reputation for going to parties and taking the prettiest woman, taking her, raping her, and then murdering her. That was Saddam Hussein's son, who was could have been next as president of Iraq. And so, and what a wife I have, huh? Uday Hussein gets killed, and talk about a bad hair day with his photos. And Cheryl says, we got to go out and we got to go have dinner. Let's go celebrate. Uday is dead. Ding dong, the Uday is dead. And so I am thankful that Juan Williams takes the time occasionally to come on Bob and Yurt Live. And we talk through the issues and hear a liberal and a conservative agreeing that when the innocent are being slaughtered, it is justifiable for governments to use their power to go in and topple those tyrannical, oppressive governments. So that's pretty cool. Now, there are a lot of right-wing Christians who think that the proper foreign policy approach is apathy. If some other country around the world has people being slaughtered by the thousands or the hundreds of thousands, that we should not intervene forcibly. And that, you know, God has a word for that. It's apathy. And love is the opposite of apathy. Love your neighbor should inform your foreign policy. Love your neighbor should inform your foreign policy. All right, so we're out of time. I want to invite you to come to our website, KGOV.com. At Bob and Yurt Live, we've been producing Bible study videos, DVDs, Bible study albums, audio tapes, MP3 CDs, and our manuscripts, especially the plot, an overview of the whole Bible. And when you have a solid overview of the Bible in your head, when you could picture the whole story and all the twists and turns in the story of the Bible, the plot twist, then you come to the issues of the day with confidence because you understand God's positions on a dozen different major issues. And you could analyze current events, and you could speak with authority. And God needs Christians who understand his word. And so that's why we sell the plot manuscript with a money-back guarantee. It's $49.95 plus shipping and handling. And by the way, this month, July 2006, we lowered the cost of our shipping and handling across the board because of the move to DVDs and MP3 CDs. It costs less to ship that stuff. So, hey, we're out of time, but please check out kgov.com and Maranatha Christian Center. What a great school, Maranatha.